Yo, what is good, y'all? Welcome to the John Katz Show, episode number 36. Thank you all so much for tuning in. Like I said, keep switching up the intros there, just teasing the list. I'm not going to talk about the list at the beginning of every show. At some point, people that listen to this, all five of y'all, will just get used to it. But I'm doing lists at the end of every show, top five, top 10, whatever, favorite, John's favorite something. This would be top five 90s sitcoms. We'll get to that at the end of the show. List my favorite 90s sitcoms. I hope everybody's having a good week. It's Wednesday. I think the last one I put out was Wednesday. Maybe that'll be my show day, my regular day Wednesday shows. We'll see. I am not smoking. I hate talk. I'm not going to talk about that every show either. I did like health stuff last show. So I'm not going to get into health. Maybe I'll get back onto that after. I don't want to jinx it either. This is the longest. I'm like almost 4 days. This is the longest it's been in a couple years, so I don't want to jinx it. I'll talk about it when I'm completely out. Let me at least apologize for A, being all out of sorts and cranky and crazy, and my brain's just not working right. So if I seem a little off this show, because my brain's not quite working right, and I'm drinking a lot of coffee. I chopped all my hair off. You probably can't see. I got my hat forward, mixing it up with the hat. Chopped all my hair off, though. Needed a fresh start. I don't know how I feel about it. It'd been a couple years. I go long times usually without cutting my hair, but this was the longest. I mean, I trimmed it a couple times, but I got used to it. I posted it online. There seemed to be mixed reviews. It's funny. There's definitely, you know, not a lot of things are really split 50-50, but it seems to be 50-50. Like if you talk to, you know, women and said, do you prefer long hair or short hair on men? Or maybe it just depends on the guy, you know, meaning how does it look on this particular dude? But most women will tell you that they have a preference of either, you know, very clean cut looking dude, or they like the long haired scruffy look. I could tell you throughout my life, just, you know, every job I've had or any setting I've been in, because I'll go long times without shaving. I'll let my beard get really long, then I'll shave it all off. I'll let my hair get long, then I'll cut it all off. I really do look like two different people. When I have long hair and beard, and or beard even, or short of either one, people go, holy shit, you're a different dude. But I don't know. I miss it and I don't. Like, it feels so clean and fresh, and I needed something to kind of like, you know, sometimes something physical that's fresh, it'll spark a mental manifestation and vice versa, but I kind of miss it. It really grown in and you know, you get used to feeling it and playing with it and all that kind of stuff. So, but here's what I want to talk about this show. This is a topic I've gotten into before, maybe kind of tangentially touched on a little bit. I posted something about this on Twitter the other day, and I thought, you know, it sparked a discussion. I thought, here's something interesting to get into, because it is kind of a nuanced topic, and I think it applies to everybody and everything in life, which is this. What does it mean to be humble? Humbleness, you know, or even humility. I posted something to the effect of the most endearing thing you can be in life is humble. That nobody likes a snob. Literally no one likes a snob is what I said. And I got a little blow, but you know, people, I think, here's why it's interesting, because I think people take humble to mean different things. And someone I interact with a decent amount on there said something to the effect of, well, you know, if you're humble, like, he's like, I disagree with you, because especially in today's climate, people take advantage of you if you're humble. You know, that we have to be able to speak up against those who are looking to do harm to us or to our country and so forth. And I said, you know, you can, being strong and assertive, and you could, I said, you could be a humble killer. You know, don't confuse humbleness with assertiveness or even confidence for that matter. You know, you can be the most confident person in the world and still be humble. You know, like I always say, I'm actually, the stuff I talk about on here, I think I'm the worst at. Maybe it's why I haven't really ranted on. Here's what's ironic. I'm not being humble about the fact that I'm so fucking humble. How about that? Because I was about to say, I haven't ranted on being humble that much because I feel like it's something I'm pretty good at. So how about that? I do tend to get on here and rant about the things that I feel like I am still learning so much about. And it's why they're on my mind. And I feel like they're good lessons. And, you know, if it helps me, maybe it helps somebody else. But as far as the way I define being humble and the humility part of it, you know, it's more like, are you looking down on people? Are you judging people? It's gotta, to me, if you're not being humble, then even internally, somebody else actually said in the discussion online, they go, is it better to be a covert snob or an overt snob? And he was making the point, it's better to be overt. At least you know what you're dealing with. But yeah, it's that snubbing your nose at people. It's that looking down at people. It's judging others for their traits. You know, one thing I've really not ever done, I mean, you know, people could tell you being married to me or anything else that I don't put people down. I just don't. I've never, and it's not even for me, it's not even really much of a concerted effort. I don't have the impulse to want to insult someone and make them feel bad. So I don't call people names, not privately or to their face. I don't talk about people's appearances or anything else like that. You know, and it applies to like material things too, and money and status. And like, I've never looked at someone and thought like, ah, you know, look at their clothes or the car they drive or something like that. Like, it's so gross. You know, to be the humbleness and humility and all that stuff, it's rooted in appreciation. It really is. It, you know, because it's, and I think maybe, look, I don't know if this is one of those traits people are born with or not. I feel like a lot of people are just born with an innate sense of kind of empathy and understanding like that. But I think people who have been in tough situations understand it in a way that people who haven't don't. And if you've been in that spot, you're not going to judge others for being there too. Or maybe those who were insecure and feel like they're faking it, they're going to listen. It's the oldest cliche in the book, right? Those who feel bad want to put other people down to make themselves feel better. I mean, that's old as time, but yeah, you got the overt people and you got the covert people. And, you know, a lot of people will just like reveal themselves to you privately. You know, you think you're close with someone or you are close with someone. And, you know, if you're close with somebody or there's somebody in your life and they're always insulting other people privately to you, like let's say they're really nice in public and people think they're a nice guy or whatever, but then privately to you, they're talking about so-and-so's weight or the clothes somebody had on or the car some dude's driving, like that's not a nice person. That's not a humble person. You may be in their life because you happen to fit their criteria, but you might not fit their criteria if you didn't have these, you know, surface qualities that they're placing importance on due to their own insecurities. Because people who are insecure will not place importance on the correct things. They'll pretend to, but you know, the motivation is always coming from, what do others think about me? Am I impressing other people? And I'm huge on, I know some people, and it depends on the forum. I know some people are very results oriented, and certainly in certain forums I am. Somebody's fixing my car, or they're my brain surgeon. I don't really care what their motivations are, if they're the best and they're going to do a great job, but when it comes to human interaction and interpersonal relationships and stuff, yeah, I'm huge on where somebody's heart at. What's their intention? What's their motive? What's driving this person? Did they fuck up and make a mistake because they acted out of fear and they meant to do a good thing, but they messed up because they let stress and anxiety take over and they made mistakes and stuff like that? Or were they, you know, intentionally attempting to do something wrong? Were they trying to hurt me? Were they trying to manipulate me? You know, were they only looking to get use out of me for their own personal gain? Like, I always look at, what is somebody's intentions? What were they trying? somebody's well-intentioned, I'll forgive a whole hell of a lot. And someone could do a lot of great things, but if they're ill-intentioned, I want nothing to do with them. Not from an interpersonal standpoint, but again, in certain forums, look, if you're Michael Jordan, you do need ruthless killers and assassins. Michael Jordan didn't have any friends. His teammates hated him. He was getting in fights all the time. You know, I don't know. Maybe later in life, you see Jordan now, he seems to, but no one would call Michael Jordan a humble guy. He was a ruthless, savage killer. Now, would he have been a great guy to be friends with? Maybe not. But he's certainly, you know, the best guy to watch in the NBA. A lot of these, listen, there are a lot of narcissistic type personalities, which goes really hand in hand with a lot of what I'm talking about here. I've argued all the time. There's a use for certain people. Look, I don't think we've had a president, for example, who's not been a narcissistic. I wouldn't call any of these dudes humble. Get Donald Trump, for example. People always say he's a narcissistic egomaniac, this and that. I agree. But is it necessarily a bad thing when you need a killer to step in and really whip stuff into shape and do a good job? You know, again, interpersonal relationships may be different, right? But, you know, if I look at, for example, if I have a president and I just want him to go in and be a killer and make great, like, if he's a narcissistic egomaniac, his whole thing is going to be, I want to be perceived as the best. I want to be known as having done the best job. I want people to look at me like I'm the fucking greatest. And if that's their motivation, you know what I mean? It often will result in extraordinary results in that field. Now, should that person be a nursery school teacher? No. Should that person be a therapist? Should, you know, there are other fields that person probably shouldn't go into. But again, if I'm going in for brain surgery, I don't care how humble my brain surgeon is. I don't care if he's a nice guy, to be honest with you. If he's the best damn brain surgeon in the country and he's got the best results and the most positive outcomes on his surgeries, that's the guy I want operating on my brain. But yeah, I'm talking about relationships and just the way, you know, you can't, I say a lot of time, you could change a lot of things about people. You can't change somebody's heart. If you hear somebody say stuff about certain people or make even certain comments, it's like let's say you're a girl who's dating a dude and the dude's constantly commenting to you about other girls' weight, you know, like how other girls are overweight. Well, like he's probably secretly judging you for your weight too. You know what I mean? And then you gain a couple pounds, he's going to have a problem. Like, and look, I'm not saying people shouldn't be into what they're into or have certain standards and all those kinds of things, but there's a big distinction there. You know, there's a difference. And also, here's the thing about me. Okay, here's where I'm not, and here's why it's nuanced, because a lot of people would not consider me humble in this regard. I trust my own brain over anybody's. If it's like a fresh assessment or something that I've given a lot of thought to, I don't do it with experts. So like, for example, if you just put me in a room with a fresh situation and went, all right, assess this from a human behavioral standpoint, or read this thing and tell me what you took from it, or watch this clip and tell me what you took from it. I'm trusting myself over anyone, including that world-renowned brain surgeon, maybe to a fault. But when it comes to brain surgery, or it comes to fixing my car, or it comes to fixing my AC, no, I don't trust myself. I'm a fucking idiot and I want the expert to tell me what's going on. I want the best expert. I don't want myself. I don't know anything. You know, knowledge is different from natural intelligence, I guess. And I don't know that I'm the smartest guy. I like to think from a human behavioral standpoint. I pick up on a lot of things that I think most people just don't pick up on. And that's been reinforced to be accurate to me throughout my life. And you know, that is what it is. There are things that I'm not good at and that I don't pick up on, and I leave that stuff to others. You know, you could be critical of things, and you can also have very high standards for yourself too and for others. Like, those aren't bad things either, and it doesn't mean you're not a humble person. It's being critical of people on a personal level, and it's also the intent. Again, it's the intent. Am I putting people down to try to bolster myself up? Am I only being nice when I want to manipulate people into forming or fitting into whatever weird mold I have for myself? Again, it's narcissistic tendency. I'd say the least humble people are the most narcissistic. But yeah, I am insanely stubborn and opinionated. And again, if it's something I thought about before, like I get frustrated, like if I've given a lot of thought to a subject or researched it heavily and then someone comes in fresh and goes, no, you're wrong about this. Like, or if we're both, again, if I'm coming in fresh with someone else and none of us are experts, I'm trusting my own judgment. And I think people should be that way more. More people, if anything, people are lacking confidence. Again, confidence is different. People could use more self-confidence, and I could use more self-confidence in a million other areas where I'm not so confident. But yeah, anyone debates me on something will tell you I'm super stubborn and opinionated, and I'm hard to, you know, you're not really going to change my mind on something that I've already made my mind up on, that's for sure. But yeah, like I always say, you know, you want to be confident and comfortable with who you are. You really kind of have to know yourself to avoid a lot of those mental traps. It's when you start comparing yourself to others. I want what he has, or, you know, why don't I have this amazing thing and this person has that amazing thing? And it's the grass is greener people. And it really comes from the insecurity. The more you think about what you don't have, ironically, it's like the more snobbish you kind of become about what you do have. It's like it's always the people with a little bit of money who are the flashiest. The people with tons of money are walking around in flip-flops and sweatpants. The people with a little bit of money are you know, glamming out to go to Walgreens, because it's like they're the ones trying to impress people because they're the ones with the insecurity, whereas the ones who are really fully secure, they don't feel the same kind of need to appear as impressive. It's funny how that works, but that's at like the core of human nature and insecurity for sure. I talk about all the time, you know, people who are accepting of themselves and accepting of others, those really are just the easiest people to be around. There's no front going on there. You know, there's no facade. Even subconsciously, you pick up on those people when you're around them, and there's a facade there. It's something they've manufactured or created. They're not just letting themselves be who they are. They're not comfortable in their own skin. And then they make other people uncomfortable in their skin. And that is one area that I pride myself on. Something that goes hand in hand with that, where I've tried to be better at, is the complimenting people. I've talked about a lot on here, complimenting strangers. And I posted about this on Twitter a couple times, and a woman once responded and said that, you know, twice in her life, she's had somebody compliment her, a stranger complimented her. And she brought up those two instances, and she remembers both instances, and, you know, all the way through her life. That's how impactful it was. You don't remember a lot of things. You remember stuff like, imagine, you know, when you think, you forget 99.999% of stuff. Memories are funny, man. I'm going to do a show on memories one time. I've talked about it, but my whole thing with memories that blows my mind is I think we do have the capacity to store everything. I think we have all these memories, and it's like you can only access them if you choose to access them. What I mean is, so like, let's say like some mundane thing happened to you in fourth grade, right? You're walking down the street with your friend Trevor, and some puppy runs across the street and almost gets hit by a car, and the car skids and swerves off to the side and almost hits a puppy. Fine. A couple years go by and you never think about that again. The car that almost hit the puppy. It happened when you were 8, 9 years old. Now you're 45. Okay. You haven't thought about the puppy car in almost 40 years. You run into your buddy Trevor, and Trevor goes, hey man, remember that time we were walking down Third Ave and that car almost hit that puppy? And you would think, and then you'd remember, and you go, oh yeah, I do remember that. And you'd remember, you know, details about it, maybe what you were wearing, or, you know, if it was raining that day or whatever. So it's like that memory was there just lying dormant in your hard drive, but like it didn't, you could have gone your whole life with that memory not even existing. But then the fact that somebody brought it up, it almost brought it into existence. Very strange. For another show. people are like, what the fuck is this dude talking about? Sometimes I have these thoughts like that, and I think, like, am I articulating that correctly? The weirdness. I think a lot of times it's just like I feel the weirdness of it. It's like I was talking about the other day. There's this feeling of, here's why this is crazy. There's a word for this. Okay. The word is sonder. I brought this up the other day. You guys know the word sonder. I didn't know the word sonder, but let me pull this up real quick because I want to read it correctly. Okay. Sonder, noun. The realization that each random passerby is living a life as vivid and complex as your own. Y'all ever get that weird feeling? It's like, I go, wow, there's a word for that feeling. Sometimes I'll be driving or something, and you just see all these people, or you'd be in an airport, and it's like, you really are so caught up in your own head, but then you go like, wow, every one of these people just has this whole complex life that they're dealing with, and all these things. It's like, talk about humbling. I wasn't even meaning to relate this to the theme of the show with the humble talk, but it really is. Sonder is a very humbling thought when you really walk around and think about that. Because like I always say, everyone's dealing with some shit. And you just look at people, you go, wow. Sometimes I know people will people watch and kind of invent, you know, make up kind of stories about other people's. I was going to like do that as a video. I forgot about that. I was going to do like a TikTok thing where I like went around and like made assumptions about people's lives. I'm for sure, as far as the way I judge people, again, I'm not being cruel. It's not a cruelty thing. I do for sure make hella assumptions about people based on just stuff in their face, their aura, their energy. Like I was going to go to the mall and like, I go, could I even put this online? Because I was going to film people and like, you know, talk about their lives, just making stuff up based on what they look like. But again, I've had it reinforced as pretty damn accurate throughout my life when I've done those kind of things. And I've not to say I haven't been wrong. Certainly been wrong about a lot, made a lot of mistakes, but I'm pretty good at reading people, I think. But yeah, being less critical and more accepting and more authentic, it's going to make you easier to be around. It's going to make people feel more comfortable with you. You know, if there have been a couple times where I've like lashed out or insulted somebody, it's very, very few. And I do remember them because I feel bad about that type. It's like, maybe that's why I don't like doing it, because it sticks with me. Like if I said something really cruel to somebody, even if they say something cruel to me first, or even if I'm really angry at that person, it's I would be thinking about it years from now. Like, damn, I wish I didn't say that mean thing. Because you can't, once you say something, you can't take stuff. People remember. Listen, the same way that lady remembered the compliments, people remember both. Think about cruel things that have been said to you in life. You don't forget them, especially when it's said from someone you care about. Impactful stuff. You say impactful things to people and they don't forget that you said those things. And if I have said cruel, here's where I will ridicule, like if it's Joe Biden, right? Or some public figure or whatever, that's different. Making fun of politicians and public figures, and it's all tongue in cheek anyway, that's different. I'm not insulting someone on a personal level. I always feel bad. I feel, it's why I think, all right, I am kind of nice, because I do. I feel bad. Again, I'm the first one to assertively say something if it needs to be said, or to say the uncomfortable thing even if it needs to be said. So that's different. But like, all right, I'll give you an example. We have a group, used to have kind of a group from Twitter. We would do these like spaces things together, these audio groups, forums that you go in. Very long story. But we had a little crew, a couple guys, a couple girls, and I still keep in touch with these people through social media. But the reason I mention this, and I'm not saying anyone's names here, one of the ladies in the group turned out to not be who she presented herself to be. She was using, you know, a fake persona and made up a lot of details about her life and was faking her pictures using this software program. And she became close with people in the group and would talk to them, you know, on the phone even, and have very personal conversations about their lives and all kinds of stuff. And when they found out that she wasn't who she said she was, like, people were very upset and really went off on her. And to this day, we'll still openly mock her. But, like, yeah, I feel bad for her. We're talking about her the other day to someone else in this group, and I go, I still feel bad for her. Like, when the people get in, join in the mocking, like, I don't join in it, you know? It's like, yeah, I'm pissed that she did that, but anyone that would do that is obviously already doesn't feel good about themselves and is doing it because they feel shitty about themselves. So, like, well, I want to make her feel worse so she can go online and see that I'm making fun of her, and it's bad karma too, you know? But again, I don't even have the impulse. It's like my natural impulse is to feel bad. Now, if she hurt me, or listen, if someone comes after me or tries to hurt me, you know, I'll fucking destroy that person with everything I have. So, like, if someone wanted to hurt me or hurt my family or hurt someone I care about, that's different. There's a time and place to be completely ruthless and direct your justified, I don't even want to call it anger, but listen, don't let anyone hurt you. That's for sure. Don't let people hurt you in life, physically, whatever. Don't let them hurt your family. Don't let them hurt your what you own, your property, any of that stuff. Like, protect you and yourself and your family and your property at all costs. So that's different. So, like, if someone's coming, always defend yourself with everything you have. And then even be more, like, even take it up a higher notch. Like, if someone's trying to fuck you, fuck them 10 times harder. So don't confuse those two things. That's for sure. It's like what I was talking about before. The guy said, well, you still have to be assertive. Yeah, be assertive. And if someone's going to hurt you, you know, do everything you can to not let that happen. And if that means hurting them worse, then hurt them worse. That's different. But yeah, you will find that the kindest people are also usually the most appreciative people. That for sure goes hand in hand. Like, you know, be thankful for what you have. And those people are generally thankful, because it's like a lot of people know it could all go away in a heartbeat. You know what I mean? You could be on the other end of that real fast. You know, if you've been at the lowest of lows, or if you're someone who's been ridiculed, like, you understand what it would mean to ridicule someone else in a different way. And again, I don't know, maybe people are born that way. Because look, some people get ridiculed and their reaction is, well, now I'm going to ridicule other people to make myself feel better. And then others do, and they go, wow, I would never do that to someone else because I know how hurtful it feels. I don't know. I don't know if you can learn that. I say again, I don't know if you can change someone's heart. But yeah, if there's a common theme to the show lately, it's just people are so vastly different. You don't know what people are dealing with. You don't know what's going on in people's heads. A lot of people have been through so much. Like, why be cruel just for the sake of being cruel? You know, something else I was thinking about lately kind of ties into this, which is, you know, in the spirit of letting people be who they are, or, you know, even letting yourself. So that's the thing. You got to let yourself be who you are too, right? Because people are going to judge you. People are going to be critical. They are going to ridicule you, even people you know and love. Don't let that keep you from doing the thing you want to do or being the things you want to be. Like, lean into what you're good at. I wish to fucking God I just embraced stuff like this 10, 20 years ago, like this podcast. I mean, because you really do. You think, like, oh, people are going to make fun of me. It's going to suck. I should just, you know, keep, like, let me just keep trying to find, like, better regular jobs and stuff and conform to this thing, even though it's never felt right to me. Why? You know, fuck critical people. Be weird. Be authentic. You only get one shot at this thing. You're gonna spend your whole life trying to conform to what other people think you should be, living up to other people's expectations of you and acting a certain way because you think that's how people want you to act. Just be yourself. God, it really is a freeing thing to just be yourself. And listen, I don't have any kids, right? So I'm, you know, when it comes to parents, and maybe when I talk about this stuff, I think more about my own personal experience as a kid, okay? But, like, same goes for them. Let them be themselves and guide them into their strengths. That's the biggest thing. Like, okay, if I had a kid, it's like, who cares if they get straight A's and a bunch of shit they're not going to use? You know what I mean? Now, maybe if they're obsessed and they really want to go to medical school and be a surgeon and all this, they're going to need certain grades in certain subjects. Fine. But before all that even happens, look, if your kid is great at one thing or passionate at even one thing, that's fucking huge. Because like most people don't even have that one thing. Or if they just show a certain liking or inclination. So let's say the kid's a great writer. Well, now don't get on him about math all day if he sucks at math. Just be like, all right, just make sure you pass math so you don't get held back. Really lean into this writing thing, though. Like, I always love to write. My worst grades in school, meaning the worst years I was in school where I fail certain classes or, I mean, shit, man. When I moved to Florida my freshman year of high school and we just ditched school almost every day, I was in such a dark place. I think I had a 0.8 GPA one semester. It was like all incompletes and Fs. But I had an A in English. And when I went to University of Massachusetts out of high school, and I also just completely flunked out and stopped going to all a bunch of classes, I still got an A in my creative writing class. It was the one thing I enjoyed and I was pretty good at, but nobody ever said to me at age 5, 8, 12, 18, no one in my life or anyone said, hey, John, you should really lean into this writing thing. You're really great at it. You know, or if my mom or whoever was looking at my interim reports or report cards or getting on me about the D I got in algebra and all that, no one was ever saying, hey, you know what? You got this A in English, though. Like, you really should lean into that more and do something with it. Figure out how you're going to make a career out of that so you could do something you're passionate about. Like, I always said I wanted to be a broadcaster. I said I'd love to be like a radio guy or a sports broadcaster. No one ever went like, well, here. Because people aren't going to do that shit for you. And maybe as a kid they can, and parents should. I guess that's what I'm saying. As an adult, man, you really, really got to do it yourself. No one's going to be like, here, dude, do this, 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 and this. You got to figure that shit out. I always thought I could be an actor. No one ever said, listen, I really did. My whole life I would watch shows and movies and be like, I can act. It's not hard. I could be an actor. What are these people really doing? Now, I don't think I could be Daniel Day-Lewis, right? There's an upper echelon of dudes that, you know, I'm not going to be. But like, let's say like a soap opera actor, come on, that shit's cake. So like, I did when I was like, I don't know, 25. I think I told this on a different podcast when I was on Mickey's podcast. Anyway, when I was like 25 and I was between jobs and I was waiting to get... I was waiting to get a background check cleared for this new sales job I was getting. And I was waiting tables at this nice little restaurant. And I decided to go on an acting audition. I never acted before ever. I did plays when I was a kid. I just always assumed I could act. And there was an open audition for an indie film down in Miami. And I went, fuck it. I was 25. The lead role was an 18-year-old, like high school senior, like some dark, troubled kid. And I looked insanely young, so I easily passed for 18 when I was 25. And all those roles are played by adults anyway. So I drove down there and you know, it's like what you see on TV. They have me sit in a room and here's this role you're reading for. And there was other people in there to like, just read over this real quick. Then we'll have you come in and do the scenes. And they called me early, like one of the first people, and I didn't have time to even barely look through this. And I sat down with the director and producer guy, and he was playing the other part of my friend. And they went, all right, read through this, and then we'll do a second run and you can improv it and stuff. So the first run, I just kind of went nuts and started improvising all over the place because I didn't want to keep looking down at my paper like I was reading it. So I just started kind of, so the guy goes, well, that was actually great, but now do it and stick to the script. So then we did a second one. I stuck to the script. Long story short, they call me a day or two later and say, we're casting you as the lead role in this movie. And I say, get the fuck out of here. And they said, no, we're going to have the full script read through at the director's house in a couple weeks. You know, sit tight. We'll keep you posted, yada, yada. And I get a call in like a week. They say, well, we're having an issue with the funding. So Now here we go. It's not going to happen. Then they sent the whole email out with this funding issue. And long story short, the film never got funded. It never got made. We never did the whole read through even or anything. The guy's like, I am going to keep in touch for the next project I have, whatever. I never heard from the dude. Never did another audition. And it kind of satisfied me in a way because I went, all right, the only time I ever auditioned for anyone, I got the part. But at the same time, like, man, maybe I could have just been an actor. Now, look, the actor lifestyle does not appeal to me at all. But I think it'd be pretty fun to act in movies and shows and all that type stuff. I got to get to this list. I'll leave you all with this. Just listen, be kind, be compassionate, be empathetic, be sensitive. You know, if someone out there really can be helped by you offering them, you know, just a tiny bit of your time or energy or guidance or wisdom or any of those things, like, you know, that's worth doing. You know, honestly, you can change somebody's life forever. You know, you could snap somebody out of whatever hopelessness or tough shit they're dealing with. Like, again, people remember that stuff forever. The tiniest gesture, somebody could help someone forever, something that they could draw from forever. The tiniest act of kindness. So yeah, I would say that people will remember the things you say and do for them, with them, to them, good and bad, forever. So keep that in mind when you're interacting with people. Let me get to the list. I'm going to run through this list quick. I'm not going to give long descriptions of each thing. Y'all are going to know about all these, so it's not going to require much explanation. Some of my lists are more obscure, like some of my song lists and stuff, so I got to give more detail. But this is top five 90s sitcoms. I will give one disclaimer here, which is, and this is my list, so I get to do it however the fuck I want. If I call it a 90s sitcom, it doesn't mean it originated in the 90s. Most of these actually originated late 80s. However, if the majority of seasons fell in the 90s, I'm calling it a 90s sitcom because it existed during the 90s. So unlike movies where if I say it's a 90s movie, it obviously came out in the 90s. If a show came out in 1988 and ran for 10 seasons, that's a 90s show. It had, you know, 8 seasons in the 90s and only 2 in the 80s. For example. Okay, number one on the list. I know it's a cliche, obvious choice. Seinfeld, number one sitcom of the 90s, not even close. And even Seinfeld, by the way, the pilot aired in 1989. Now, obviously, it ran through the entire 90s, so that's if people think of it as a 90s. Nobody thinks of Seinfeld as an 80s sitcom. But yes, it was a groundbreaking, revolutionary show about nothing. And they weren't, as people know, the folklore goes, they were going to cancel it after the first season. It caught on with this cult following and it became the most successful sitcom in history for a reason. Jerry, George, Elaine, and Kramer, best characters to do it. And it's the only really old sitcom that I'll still watch episodes of if they're on to this day, or I'll throw them on Netflix, or I have the old DVD box set, not that I've taken it out in a while, but I have the box set of all the seasons too. So, but they're classic. And it's the kind of thing where if I'm talking to someone, it's so many great reference points that can come up that still apply to society in so many situations. So it's fun when you're interacting with another Seinfeld fan because you can make so many, you know, fun inside references that everybody understands. All right, coming in number two, this is a Johnny favorite. Again, Johnny's favorite list. Fresh Prince of Bel-Air aired, by the way, Fresh Prince came out in 1990. Think about that. Fresh Prince came out a year after Seinfeld. That doesn't seem right in your head, right? Like, if you think about it, it would seem like Fresh Prince came out before Seinfeld did. But how could you not love the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air? And, you know, I'm 11 when that comes out, a Will Smith fan. Just so many really great episodes and just a fun. Not that it was the funniest show. I don't know. It just had like a good positive vibe to it, and the family life, and Uncle Phil, and any kid during that era loved Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. All right, moving along. Number three, Saved by the Bell. Okay, now again, Saved by the Bell came out in 89. By the way, Saved by the Bell was only 4 seasons. Is that insane? I know they did more episodes back then, but it feels like that show ran for way more than 4 seasons, doesn't it? I think it's because, well, then they did say, okay, Right, but they did say by the bell college years. So if we're lumping it all in, fine. That was technically a different show. And I think they just ran it on syndication so much over and over. But talk about a cult following and a cult show. And it was the kind of show where, like, at least for me and the people I was friends with that watched it, like, we were old enough where we already knew it was kind of making fun of itself. Like, it seems so. By the way, it's not like today I wouldn't go back and watch Saved by the Bell episodes. I might watch a Fresh Prince episode if it happens to be on, especially some of my favorite ones, but I don't know. These don't necessarily hold up today. I'm basing it on what I was watching back then and what I enjoyed the most at the time, for sure. All right, coming in number four, another cult classic favorite, Married with Children. You know, Ed O'Neill's obviously gone on to have huge success with the guy that played Al Bundy, huge success with Modern Family. But Married with Children, man, what a raunchy. Now, again, started in 87, but it ran 11 seasons. So till 98. And it just, that show gave zero fucks. Like, now a lot of shows are like that. But at the time, there wasn't anything else on TV doing it the way that show was doing it, with that kind of raunchy vibe. And it was just very unapologetic, especially the Al Bundy character and the dysfunctional kids and wife, Peggy and, you know, Bud and Christina Applegate and them. All right. And coming in at number five, maybe I'm a little nostalgic because rest in peace, Bob Saget just passed away. I got to go Full House. Okay. This one, I'm pushing the envelope a little bit, and aired in 87. It ran eight seasons. It feels, that one, for whatever reason, does feel a little 80s-ish to me, but I did love me some Full House. And I think, too, because I was so young when it came out. So, again, aired in 87. I'm only 8 years old at that point. I think if I was older, I wouldn't have really gotten into Full House. But I was a little kid, and we loved that show. And I don't know. It was a fun, feel-good show. I don't know. When I was a kid, I for sure liked some of the feel-good. Like, I'll do the 80s list one time. Those are, because I'm younger, it's going to be a lot more of the feel-good stuff. You're not going to have the Married with Children and the Seinfelds and more of the adult comedy in there that I started to appreciate, you know, as a preteen or teen. So that's it. That's the list. My sister for sure is going to hate me for not putting Friends in there. I did watch every episode of Friends and I enjoyed it at the time. For some reason, it's one of those shows that, like, when I see it now, I'm like, it feels, something feels off or forced to me about it. Or, like, I don't know. It's hard to explain. It's one of those shows, looking at it now in hindsight, the vibe is off, but it would still make my top 10 list for sure. And shout out to shows like Roseanne. And I used to love a show called Hey Dude that I was considering for this list. I don't know if people remember that show, Hey Dude, on the Dude Ranch back in the day, which I started watching as a little kid too, you know, around 10 years old. I don't know, some random stuff from back then, but in any case, that's the list. I'd love to hear y'all's feedback. Give me some ideas for other lists y'all want to hear. They could be any era. I want to go back. It's funny. I did last week my favorite all-time rock albums, and I did the top 10. I think 9 out of 10 of them fell into the 90s. So I really should have made that a 90s rock album list and just left Def Leppard Hysteria off and put it on my 80s. Rock album list is my number one, but I'm going to still do 70s, 80s, 2000s, rock, rap, you name it, all the genres, all the eras. We're doing TV, movies, shows, actors, whatever. I'm going to keep this going forever. Every John Catchow episode from here on out is going to have some sort of list tacked onto the end of it. So let me know what y'all think. Anyway, I hope everybody's having an easy week, and I really do appreciate each and every one of you tuning in and listening into this thing. And hit me up on Twitter, anything y'all want to talk about, at John Cat Show, and I will be back for you in a couple days with a new episode. Thank you so much. Be good. Peace.